At what time, then, did you separate from the service, or have you maintained connections?
Oh, I retired, as one does, with a pension, in 1966. But since then, I've had quite a lot of work with welfare organisations connected with the services. One was, first of all, the Victory Club in London, where service people can stay for a very small amount of money, and it's a very fine club. And then I was a governor of the Royal Star and Garter for 14 years. And that's for disabled men. And now, recently, they're opening their doors to women too, but badly disabled men, and some from the Somme and battles of the First World War, and some, alas, from Ireland and the Falklands. And that was fascinating work, because they are such splendid people, and they don't complain, and they make one feel very humble, really, to realize that we complain about little things, but they don't.
I hear in your voice a genuine concern, then, for continued public service.
Yes, I don't look upon it as public service. I just look upon it as something one does very naturally, and that is a great privilege to know the people who are disabled. And they're very kind about talking to one and telling one about their quite extraordinary experiences.
Let's go back to the war years. I'm assuming that many of the men that you would have worked with during the war would have known your father. Is that correct?
No, they didn't. And I must say that during the war years were the only time that I was ever reminded that I was the daughter of my father. Now, during the war years, I would sometimes be called and found Dr. Watson or Spooky or something like that. But this was all from short-term officers, and I didn't really mind it. But when we got down to the nitty-gritty of the permanent Air Force, all this stopped. And people knew me as myself. And in fact, on the day when I was leaving the Air Force and went round to say goodbye to some of the more senior officers, one of them said, having just read the newspaper, I had no idea you were related to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle at all. And that's how it should have been.
How about your husband's feelings in that regard? When did he first become aware that this woman he was interested in was the daughter of Conan Doyle?
Oh, he always knew. And then he wasn't a great reader, but then he made a point of reading a lot of my father's works.
How did he handle that? Did he kid you about it? Or did he feel like, well, enough people at this time are calling you nicknames, that he would respectfully withdraw from that kind of comment?
No, nobody was calling me nicknames in those days. This was just a short-term thing during the war. He didn't mind at all. He always backed me up when people came to interview me and see me. And it always amazed me that here was this man who was so distinguished in his own right, and had done so much for the country, and just the sort of man that my father would have admired most, because he did admire the military people very much, and particularly, I think, men who made their names in the aviation. And people would come, and my dear husband would be so courteous to them as the host, and yet people were not interested in him and his life at all. And my father would have been very embarrassed by this. And I was embarrassed for it. But my husband was such a big man that I never once heard him complain about it. And nor did I ever see him feel in any way put out that this was happening.
At the same time,
he was a very big man.
Yeah, at the same time, maybe you were a little put out once or twice.
Oh, I would be on his behalf, yes.
Interesting.
Well, people in this world get things so topsy-turvy.